prayers by Shukadev Goswami. The personality of Godhead. I had anticipated we would cover more ground than we are, but the verses are so nice. There's so much. Yesterday evening at the temple, the Kirata Kunandra Pulinda Prokasha Abira, etc. Such a nice verse. Showing that. That window over there, get open to. Showing that spiritual perfection. Because that's Shukadev Goswami's target, or that's his situation, and that's what he wants to deliver. Spiritual perfection. So that's the Bhagavatam standard. And it's attainable by anyone from any background. How glorious is Krishna, and how glorious is the process of approaching him. So this next verse, text number 19 from chapter 4, is one of these Mahima verses. You just knocked it. Well, okay. Where a list of glories. There's different types of prayers. Narottam Das Thakur in one little essay kind of description has identified the types of prayers, there's categories of them. So one of them is like this one. The glories. O Supreme Lord, you are this. O Supreme Lord, you are that. And glories and glories and glories and all glories unto you. And then there's prayers where there's petition to the Lord for something. Lots of people pray to God for something. And at the end, Shukadev Goswami's petition is that you kindly be pleased with me. Of course he is. Krishna is very pleased with Shukadev Goswami, but this is his one desire, his aspiration. So the prayer reads, he is the super soul. So the reference to super soul appears then in Jiva Goswami's commentary on Paramatma Sandarbha, because Paramatma is the super soul, and there are key places in the Bhagavatam where super soul is addressed, and because Shukadeva Goswami is the speaker of the Bhagavatam, when he speaks about the super soul, that's like a very important verse. How does he function as the super soul, which is certainly in relation to the question that was asked, how do you do with this creation? So it's all arranged by the Purusha avatars, and Paramatma is one of those Purusha avatars. So again, he is recognizing that Krishna, who's in previous verses the dearmost associate of the members of the Yadu dynasty, is the super soul, or the super soul is Krishna in Dwarka. and Krishna in Vrindavan. So the Bhagavan feature, in other words, Bhagavan feature and Paramatma feature, and in turn, the Brahman feature, they are all features of the same absolute truth, the same primal entity. Vedanta tattva vedastattvam yaj jnanam advayam rameti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabjite. Just a little lesson in the composition of the Bhagavatam. Once again, Jiva Goswami explains that there are in spiritual works, spiritual writings, there are principal utterances, mahavakyas, that are, it's like a hub upon which there are many spokes, and the spokes that support the wheel that make the machine run, they're supported by the hub. And so from that mahavakya, so many other statements are made. And that in this verse, Vedanta tattva vedas tattvam yad jnanam advayam is one of those verses, principal utterances in the Bhagavatam. And here, one of the spokes is Shukadeva Goswami indicating that fact. Krishna, who is, just to meditate on Krishna is so ecstatic, and he's this, he is ecstatic, he is ecstasy, and he's this, and he's that. No. He gets carried away, just glorifying Krishna, but one of the glorifications is, he is all of these different features. But it's him. Prabhupada explains that the impersonalist has a notion that says the absolute must be devoid of limitations, and as soon as you have personality, you have a limitation, because they're thinking of personality like we find, where their personalities are limited. Where's their personality that's unlimited? And therefore, the absolute must be without personality. No limitation. As soon as you, it's like putting the sky inside a box or something. You can't fit. What box is big enough to put the sky in? The sky is bigger than everything. So therefore the Supreme must be impersonal. As soon as you have person, it's limitation. Because they're thinking in terms of their own experience only. Which definitely relates to the statement of this verse, as you'll, if I stop talking and read the verse, you'll hear the verse. This fact cannot be realized by a non-devotee and cannot even be realized by a devotee with pretension. It can be realized only by a non-pretentious devotee. We can get, in other words, we can get the concept down, so that like good students we can get A's in our exams, we can, when prompted, we can give the right answer and say the right thing, get an A in your exam, and still stay in the material world birth after birth, because we still haven't been in the position of being fully accepting and living our lives accordingly. The non-pretentious devotee. So, anyway. He is the super soul. Second glory. And the Supreme Lord of all self-realized souls. So there are some souls that are not self-realized. And there are lots of processes of self-realization. Whether they're seen as that way or advertise themselves as that way. Self-realization in the marketplace of America today, there is a lot of self-realization stuff going on. According to the Srimad Bhagavatam, put it nicely, that's not self-realization unless the Supreme Lord, Krishna, and another name is fine, but Bhagavan, Paramatma, and Brahman, that Supreme Lord is the Lord of the life of such persons. And then there are ways to evaluate, well, what does it mean to be the Lord of life? Discussed in the purport. He is the personification of the Vedas. The personification of, there's the Vedas, and there's the personified Vedas, and he is the Lord of the personified Vedas. He is that which the Vedas, and he is the personification of that which the personified Vedas are glorifying. Or, when Brahma, in this canto, in the ninth chapter, comes before the Supreme Lord, and he sees him, this is even before creation happens, before Brahma gets up and, you know, does his morning duty of creating the universe. Even before there's any stuff, or to speak of shapes of that stuff, he sees the spiritual world, enters, comes before the Supreme Lord, and he's surrounded by all of his potencies, and the personified Vedas who are glorifying him. He is the Krishna is the object of glorification, the personified, not the energy force, but the personification of the Vedas, the goal of the Vedas. All religious scriptures and all austerities. For what do persons engage in austerities? There's lots of reasons that people take up austerities. Sometimes involuntary, and sometimes voluntary. And the voluntary ones, they want something. Through this austerity, I'll get something. Whatever that something is, it's come from Krishna, and Krishna is as the source of that something, in one sense, he's the something. Krishna is the object of all those who undergo austerities, who study the Vedas, and the object of the Vedas themselves, personified. He is worshipped by Brahma and Shiva, and all those who are transcendental to all pretensions. This is the fourth glory. And Prabhupada jumps on this word pretensions, or pretentious, or being unpretentious. So that's what this morning's class is going to be about. What does it mean? And how do you get there? Being so revered with awe and veneration, may that supreme absolute be pleased with me. Now that's a high aspiration, but that's what spiritual aspiration is. Oh, once again, Shukadeva Goswami is speaking about perfection, and this resonates with the opening verses. The first three verses of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam were a similar mahima. The glories of Srimad Bhagavatam are being proclaimed. Da, 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 this Srimad Bhagavatam is glorious in this way, in this way, in this way. And one of the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam is dharma protita kaitavotra paramo dhirmatsaranam satam. So, it's the subject of Srimad Bhagavatam is Paradharma. There are different ideas of Dharma. And this is where this separation comes between pretentious Dharma and Paradharma. contentious dharma or kaitava dharma. Prabhupada has translated that as cheating religion, which they're contradictions, aren't they? Cheating religion. Religion that's Vedic or given by God, but there are principles given by God or given by Vyas that rob, steal, cheat the living entity from his real happiness. What is that cheating? It's holding up some other than the unalloyed devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Holding up some other perk. You do this, you get that. It's right in this canto. It's right in the third chapter. This is the fourth chapter. In the beginning of the third chapter, in case you weren't tuned in for those classes, the beginning of the third chapter, to explain what devotional service is, Shukadeva Goswami explains what devotional service isn't. Worship, what devotional service isn't, is where there's worship or service, just like our Chinese friend who came to the class yesterday was asking, what is service and submission? What do these two words mean? What do they look like? How do you do them? So, service, where there's a motivation, I want, fill in the blank. And maybe you have lots of lines to fill in many blanks. Then there's prescribed methods for that. One who wants good health, one worships the sun. One who wants good intelligence or knowledge, one worships Saraswati. One who wants this, worships that. One who wants that, worships that one. And one who wants perfection, this is paradharma, one worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead exclusively. And that's what Shukadeva Goswami says is the duty of every living being. And what do we do, the discussion yesterday, what do we do with the fact, the reality, that there are other desires in the heart besides that? And the answer is, don't worry about it. Because Krishna will take care of whatever those things are. But this requires faith. Mayi chanani yogena bhaktir avyabhicharini. That avyabhichari bhakti, the position of having complete faith, avyabhichari, undivided devotion, when one has that undivided devotion, when Krishna sees that undivided devotion, what does he do? He takes care of everything. Just like a parent that has many children, imagine, Prabhupada has given this example. A parent has many children. The parent is naturally going to take care of the needs of the children. But supposing amongst the many children, one child is particularly affectionate, and particularly dependent, and particularly loving. What does that do to the parent? They'll be kind to all their children. They'll show special affection to that one child. It's just reciprocation with the affection of the child. It's not, I like you and I don't like the other ones. They're affectionate to all their children, but reciprocating with the affection of the very affectionate child. It's natural. This is again this impartiality, partiality. Mm-hmm. And that's Krishna. It's we should know. That's Krishna's nature. And one who knows Krishna's nature doesn't have to come with a requisition slip. Krishna, you have a really big warehouse, and I've got a lot of needs. It's a long list, but can you take care of at least a good portion of them, at least these in particular? We don't need to do that. One has faith, and that's what Paradharma is teaching. That's what Paradharma is teaching. What we need is our relationship of love and service to Krishna. Same theme as yesterday, but here it's coming again. There's this service without pretension, or the path of self-realization, or the attainment of self-realization is marked by no other shelter but Krishna. That's what it means. We'll go back and say it again in a different way. Prabhupada once described that self-realization and God-realization, they occur simultaneously. Self-realization without God-realization is not self-realization. He gave the example, when it's dark, you can hold a mirror in front of your face and what do you see? Darkness. You don't see anything. The mirror has the capacity to reflect your face, but you can't see it without light. And when the sun rises, simultaneously you can see the light of the sun, you can see your face. Simple example, huh? Self-realization and God-realization, they occur simultaneously. Self-realization without God-realization is not self-realization. It's something, it's an imagination. It may have a feel-good buzz to it, but it's not self-realization. Because that self, that feel-good buzz, fades. And then you're back with mama maya duratya. Difficult struggle. Something happened. What happened? Or you just need another self-realization lesson. It's only $35. In California, it's big. I just, you know, I was speaking with people that say, it was Indian families that say there's a bunch of Indian families in California. They're really getting into this. I won't mention the name of the thing. And, you know, I won't mention the name of the person that studied the Vedas and gathered up stuff and made a business out of self-realization. And if you have a problem, you just need another class. So one of the persons that we were sitting with was saying he has a number of co-workers in his office, and he's, you know, an executive, and these people are saying, you gotta come to the self-realization seminars. He's saying, well, what do they teach? You just gotta come to the seminar, you'll find out what they teach. Well, you know, what's the conception of God that they... Just come and you'll find out. It's only $35. That's really good. It's changed my life. How has it changed your life? Come on and find out. So without... Fortunately, for the devotees that have... I mean, it's kind of common sense, but... There's scriptural authority to support the common sense that self-realization requires shelter in God. And then you have to have, one may have a misconception of God. There's lots of conceptions of God out there, and some of them are less than complete, and some of them are really wacko. So we need guidance of scripture, just like the discussion yesterday evening class. The scripture is to give us standard knowledge. Shruti, Smriti, Puranadi, Panchara, Triki, Vidhimbina, Haikunti, Gihare, Bhaktir, Utpat, Kayaiva, Kalpite. Utpat, big disturbance, is caused by persons who claim spiritual knowledge in the path of self-realization without reference to scripture, authorized scripture. It's just a big disturbance. And it's a big disturbance. And it's getting bigger. Therefore, the medicine has to be applied. The remedy of standard knowledge coming from qualified persons like Shukadeva Goswami, that they're not, there's no speculation involved. Jnana, karma, dhyanavratam, it's gone. It's, they have realization and they're imparting realization. Okay. Purport. The Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, although the Lord of all followers of different paths of self-realization is knowable only by those who are above all pretensions. Again, that verse, or that sentence from Bhagavad Gita introduction, Krishna comes to remind people what is the goal of life when they've forgotten what the purpose of life is. And of those who have understood what the purpose of life is, very, very, very rare is it to find someone who has entered into the spirit of that understanding in the Bhagavad Gita spoken for such persons. That's what's being said here in this line also. That language is different. But there are many different paths of self-realization, and Krishna is the object of those paths of self-realization, if they're at all a genuine path of self-realization. But the objective of that path of self-realization is only realized by those who are above pretension, or in that language from Bhagavad Gita, have entered into the spirit of the understanding. They've applied, and not only applied, they've fully realized in the very beginning of the first canto of the Bhagavatam, when Sutta Goswami is being approached by the sages of Naimisharanya, that's what they say about him, that not only you have heard, and not only you can repeat what you've heard, but you've realized, you've assimilated, and therefore what you can present to us is the digested, pablumized, easily swallowable and easily digested message of transcendence. Please speak what you've heard, because it's not just information, it's realization. Prabhupada spoke about his own writing and said, in the history of the world there's never been so many copies of religious literature sold. And why is it? Because messages coming from realization. It's unique, not just scholarly or right. It's realized knowledge, and you contact realized knowledge, and it's surcharging. It's very, very powerful. So the personality of Godhead is knowable only by those who are above pretensions, stated in the purport. What's pretension? It's something is real, something is this, and one presents this as that. So there's deception of others, and there's self-deception. One can know it's that and represent it this. Or one can not know that it's that and think it's this and say it's this. But that's self-deception. That piggybacks self-deception with other deception. And so there's no deception. There's no this is what Sukadeva Goswami is saying in the verse. There's no pretension. So Brahma and Shiva are pointed to as persons who are in that category. They revere the personality of Godhead with full understanding of who he is, and because they have that full understanding of who he is, although they are heads of sampradayas, this is coming from the purport now, therefore, according to Padma Purana, four principal sampradayas, and Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, the four Kumaras, and Goddess of Fortune, Lakshmi, they're the heads of those four sampradayas. So they could be thinking hey, I'm the head of the Sampradaya. But they're not thinking, hey, I'm the head of the Sampradaya. They're thinking, I'm the servant of the Supreme Lord. That's the qualification. Above pretension. So, another way of appreciating what above pretension is not only do they have knowledge, but they have all the qualities that represent one who has genuine knowledge, such as humility. Real humility, not false humility. Not the material idea of what humility is, that they tremble and cower and, you know, can't do anything because they're so humble. Not that kind of humble. Or the other kind of deception humble is, just see how humble I am. I'm going to be really humble and everyone will appreciate how humble I am. It's part of my greatness because I'm very humble. None of that egoism. Just genuinely possessing that quality. Ashwamedha is genuinely possessing that quality himself. He has full realization of Krishna. And he's just glorifying those who have full realization of Krishna. Unreservedly. And glorifying the process of knowing Krishna and glorifying Krishna. And there's no trace of pride, prestige, false ego. It's just pure glorification. Or another very important quality is sincerity. So when one has realized, that is, there's the trying to be sincere, and there's the fully manifested quality of sincerity. Sincerity says, I really want, not so that I'll appreciate, I can feel good with myself, or others will feel good about me. I'm a good person. I have good desires and have good purposes in life, and I really want to make sure that other people recognize that. One man approached me after the evening program yesterday, and he was just sharing something that was really paining him. He had done some, for his life, done so many things for my family members, and I had no expectation, but he did, because he said, but then when some difficulties came my way and I reached out to my family members, they didn't respond at all. And it really hurts. So there's expectation. So going back to the previous, is the standard of pure devotion is where there's no expectation other than the relationship. And in that relationship, just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, my dear Lord, you can do with me whatever you like. You can embrace me, you can trample me, you can neglect me. You can do with me whatever you like, unconditionally. I only have one request, to be engaged in your loving service. Pray like that and then wait for the neglect or the crush or the embrace to happen. Wait a minute, I didn't mean it. I want that one, not those two. So sincerity is where you really mean it. There's no pretension. Krishna can be realized only by those or beyond pretension. The genuine quality is genuine. It's there. Sincerity, humility, pridelessness. So, I guess we're never going to know Krishna, right? Because to get to that stage is not the right conclusion. The Bhagavatam is not presented just so you're going to get frustrated. Well, that's in the frustration. Forget it, kid. You're never going to make it. I just want you to know that this, that knowing Krishna is such a elevated thing, you might as well not even try, because you're pretentious. That's not the message. It's the message is to inspire, to understand, using Prabhupada's language, to understand what is the goal and to give impetus to reach the goal. Put fuel in your tank and help you get there, and you know where you want to go. This is chapter 4 of Canto 2. In chapter 9 of Canto 2 is the Chatur Shloki verses of the whole Bhagavatam. That's another, I was mentioning Mahavakya verse. So these four verses are also very, very important. They're, in these four verses are encapsulated the whole message of the Bhagavatam. It has a different function than the Chatur, than a Mahavakya. It's the philosophical content in a summary way. And one of those verses relates to this word pretension. One of those verses says, Anato Pashamam Sakshat. No, that's from the, that's another reference. The, if you, this is Krishna speaking to Lord Brahma. If you perceive something to exist as having value unto itself apart from the Supreme, know that to be my illusory energy. Mm-hmm. It's not the thing. It's the consciousness of seeing something to be of value, standing on its own apart from Krishna. See something existing apart from God, and it's covetable, it's valuable, it has some meaning and richness and importance apart from God. Seeing like that is Krishna's illusory energy. And that's what pretension is. It's self-realization without God, or the qualities of a saintly person without the submission to God, without attributing that capacity to God. And, you know, in its full genuineness, not just giving lip service and carrying another consciousness. It's when one fully carries the consciousness that whatever it is that is of value has come from God. And what I want is not those things of value. What I want is a relationship with God. Again, wanting those things of value. And if God's there, that's nice, but I want those things of value. That's pretense. It's not what self-realization is. It's not what Shukadeva Goswami is speaking about. It's not Paradharma. It's not what the Bhagavatam is speaking about. But this proclamation, Acharyas say, this proclamation at the beginning, Dharma Projita Kaitavotra Paramo Nirmat Saranam Satam. It's like an announcement saying, hear ye, O reader of this text, if you're interested in getting some material attainment, don't bother reading anything more. Because that's not what this is about. If you have that interest, go to some other text. Because this text is going to take away that interest. It's like the verse of Rupa Goswami where one gopi says to another gopi, my dear gopi, do not go to the bank of the river Jamuna by Keshigat. If you would all desire happiness in family life, because on the bank of the Jamuna by Kishika, there's one small boy. And when you hear the sound of his flute and see the sidelong glances coming from his eyes, your interest in material happiness will go away. So don't go there. If you at all want to advance in this area of material happiness. That's Rupa Goswami's poetry, and the Bhagavatam's poetry is this message of the Srimad Bhagavatam is Paradharma. And the message is to take away this, along with devotional service, I want stuff. So now, anticipating the question, Maharaj, how do we get to that state of unpretentious devotional service? I'm anticipating the question. Here's the answer, right in the purport. The unpretentious devotee, those who want nothing for self-satisfaction, that's another parallel definition of unpretentious. Pretentious is, I'm approaching God, what I really want is for myself. And unpretentious is, I'm approaching this process of devotional service. Although I may not be there at this stage, I want to come to the stage where there's nothing in my heart but the desire to please the Supreme Lord. And I need all the help I can get there, but that's where I want to get there. I sincerely, what's the eligibility of a candidate for devotional service from nectar devotion? Sincere desire. I'm far from there, but that's, I covet that, I want that. I have that desire. I only want your unalloyed devotional service, birth after birth. Mama Janmani, Janmanishwari, Navatad Bhaktir, Ahai Tuki Twai. And that's inspirational, and I'm not there yet, but I want to get there. The desire to have the desire, Prabhupada explains. Even that's it counts. You're eligible for this unpretentious devotional service. And what helps one get to that unpretentious devotional service? In short, hearing about Krishna. He is so wonderful. He's worth sacrificing everything for to get relationship with Krishna, loving relationship with Krishna. That's the how-to. Hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Those who do not want anything for self-satisfaction, they do have a want. They want to serve the Lord because the Lord is great, and as living entities, they are eternally subordinate parts and parcels of the Lord. This perfect realization of the self by the devotee helps him to become desireless, or to desire nothing for his personal self, and thus the devotee is called nishkami, without any desire. So, Krishna is this, Krishna is that, Krishna is so wonderful, Krishna's nature is so loving. Hearing the glories of Krishna inspires one to want to please him. It's natural. Now, there are things that block that which is natural, like enviousness. That's unnatural. And that enviousness causes great pain and suffering. And not only the servants in relationship with Krishna, but in relationship with everything that's in relationship with Krishna, which is everything. Like people and events and exchanges that we have with people in life, and, you know, It's that which brings us to the material world. Dvesha, towards Krishna. And raga, coveting the position of being the enjoyer, when Krishna is the enjoyer. We're the tiny part of Krishna. So the more that we can understand this constitutional position of a living entity in relation to Krishna, we're tiny. And he's unlimited. And he's very kind and loving. Krishna, help me. Natural. We take that, the more that we can understand that and take up the spirit of that understanding, we can realize Krishna. We can become this selfless person. And not only do good deeds to help others, like charity and philanthropy and altruism and people that are hungry to give them food and people that are uneducated to give them education and people that are needy to supply their needs. Those, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur describes, those are the consequences of impiety. Fix the impiety problem. And even those that have, they're also suffering because in that having condition, they become proud. I have, and others don't have. So let me, if I'm a pious man, let me give what I have to those that don't have, and that gives me a sense of contentment when one is, may very well be forgetting, where did that which you have come from? And what are you doing about that? The expression of love and service unto the Supreme from whom those things that you have come. Acting in one's relationship with the Supreme is really the essence. Charity is fine. All good things are good. But as the previous verse that we, verses that we're discussing, without devotional service, they cannot give the real fruit of, and what's the real fruit? Perfection of life. Loving relationship with Krishna. They all are a bunch of zeros. Prabhupada, a way of making things so simple. If you have 1 zero or 100 zeros, what do you have? Zero. But put a one in front of the zero and you have 10. Put a one in front of 2 zeros, you have 100. And so on. Just put the one in front of all those zeros and they become very valuable. Nice, huh? Very simple. That's the message that we're hearing. And when, this is the thing, when that is there, what's the impetus to put the one in front? And it's understanding, it's real basic. What's your constitutional position? We're very tiny. God is very great. Prabhupada explained, I've repeated this so many times. Krishna consciousness is very simple. God is very great. We are very tiny. Therefore we should serve him. That is Krishna consciousness. But to understand how great is God, that they do not know. And so, how great is God is the content of this verse. Therefore I should serve him. In relation to him, I am very tiny. That inspires me. I don't become envious and jealous. Oh, he's great. Let me see how I can bring him down, or I can compete with him. Philosophically, at least. Try. Or energetically, or whatever it is. And that's demoniac mentality, and we want to give up that mentality and take up the devotional mentality. So, good association with those that are on the path of becoming free from that, or like Shukadeva Goswami is completely free from that. Associate with Shukadeva Goswami. You become unpretentious. Hear regularly from Srimad Bhagavatam, the glories of the Supreme Lord, from the realized souls, like Shukadeva Goswami, and with these wonderful purports that Prabhupada has given, and very attentively hear them let them enter deeply into your heart, assimilate them, and live according to those teachings. Try, and like our discussion yesterday morning, realize, gee, my effort is not getting me there. Krishna, please help. I need your infinite mercy to help me. Reaching out to Krishna, then the help comes. Krishna is ready to give. His hands are filled with mercy, just waiting to give to us, and we're turning our head the other way. Mm. I'm going to do it. Watch me. That's the pretense. The unpretentious is the genuine call for Krishna. He gives. And the sincere caller for Krishna's mercy gets Krishna's mercy. And then they don't have the problem of thinking, I did it. False pride entering into the heart of the pretentious practitioner. Only the unpretentious practitioner can realize Krishna. That's what Shukadeva Goswami is teaching us here. And when that accomplishment is made, there's no sense of false independence, there's no fear, there's no complacency, there's no false ego. What a relief, huh? But one has to be inspired beyond getting relief. It's not moksha that we want. We have to want eagerly our relationship with Krishna, and he will reciprocate. Prabhupada quotes Jiva Goswami in the purport. Jiva Goswami quotes this in his Bhakti Sandarbha. This is, again, this is a very important section. Just a little bit of Jiva Goswami's methodology. He says, we can understand the whole of the Bhagavatam by understanding key passages of the Bhagavatam where key personalities express the essence of the Bhagavatam. One of those essences that appears several times in the Bhagavatam, in his commentary, the Sandarbha commentary, is Vyasa's realization after being instructed by Narada to write Srimad Bhagavatam. And he says, you do this, get your realization, on the basis of that realization, you would then write Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srimad Bhagavatam is that realization. So there's four verses where Sutta describes what the realization of Vyasa is, and so Jiva Goswami really zeroes in on that. And one of them just comes to mind is what this pretension is. What is pretension? It's a covering where it's self-delusion. Like the Kshatriya Sloki verse, seeing something existing apart from the Supreme, delusion. What Vyas realized in his trance was he saw the Supreme Lord, he saw the living entity, saw the illusory energy behind the Supreme Lord, because you can't see the Supreme Lord when the illusory energy is before the Supreme Lord. He conceals himself by that illusory energy. But Vyas saw the illusory energy behind the Lord. And he saw the living entity, and he saw the living entity in his self-realized state and his deluded state. So he saw what is the cause of delusion. Or this pretense. You want to be genuine and you're being disgenuine. Phew. What a struggle. Mm-hmm. So, when Krishna sees our sincerity, He instructs the illusory energy. Now you can stand behind. That's okay. Leave him alone. And she obeys. But if our sincerity is mixed or intermittent or pretentious, that signal doesn't go to the illusory energy. We're still yaya samohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam. The three modes of material nature have us tightly bound. And the unwanted anartha kshamam sakshat bhakti yoga madhoksha, the anartha, the undesirable features of material existence, are withdrawn by the Supreme Lord when he sees this devotional service mood. I just want loving service to Krishna. So Jiva Goswami writes about this verse. In the Sanskrit, the word is gata vyalikai. Gata vyalikai in the word for word is by those who are above all pretensions. What is that? Gata vyalikai, Jiva Goswami says, is this projita kaitava. He refers to the introductory verses of the Bhagavatam, where it's paradharma. And they know it, and they don't have any other interest than paradharma. And we all have interest in paradharma and some other baggage. And that's the struggle. So, the words of the Bhagavatam are to kick out dharma projita kaitavotra paramo yirma, to relieve us of those other shelters. Again and again and again, helping us understand it's really a bad bargain. Don't buy this used car. The guy that wants to sell it to you is because it doesn't work. That's why he's selling it. Don't buy the used car. Don't buy this other kind of a dharma. Don't go forward with devotional service with the idea that this will make me pious and I'm going to get karma and yeah. Because we're very conditioned to doing things because we want fruit of gain from the things that we do, or we want knowledge that comes from our own capacity, our own speculative capacity. And that's not the purpose of paradharma. It's just that the spiritual world descends into our life and we enter into the spiritual world in a loving relationship with Krishna. Even in our present circumstance, even whatever the circumstance is, doesn't have to change. That's the Bhagavatam message. And now you have to give up this and go to the forest and then you can realize Krishna. The Bhagavatam doesn't teach us that. It may be suited for a certain person to go to the forest and realize Krishna there. That's great. And others that have another psychophysical propensity, that's great too. It's a burden if it's not with Krishna consciousness, but with Krishna consciousness, perfection of life is accessible. At once is the message Sukadeva is describing. Because of Krishna. Because Krishna is so powerful and so kind and so loving and so pure and purifying. Go there at once. He's the faith nurturer. But by hearing Krishna's wonderful glories, this mentality of approaching Krishna with your wish list goes away. You don't need it. It's not necessary, and it's not nice, even. So, conclusion. The conclusion is, therefore, that the Supreme Lord is the Lord of everyone, because no one can achieve the result of his respective desires without his sanction. Now, please remember from the previous verses, it's been indicated that's secondary even. But even the secondary stuff can't be achieved without the Supreme Lord sanctioning it. But as stated by the Lord in Bhagavad Gita 8:9, all such results are awarded by him only, for the Lord is Adishvara, the original controller of everyone, namely the Vedantists, the great Karmakandiyas, the great religious leaders, the great performers of austerity, and all who are striving for spiritual advancement. So they can't get their spiritual advancement or their attainment without Krishna. And don't be pretentious. Give Krishna credit. And surrender to him. And glorify him. Worship him, serve him, praise him, and don't do this pretentious program. Put Krishna behind a cloak and he remains there. Krishna! But ultimately, he is realized by the pretensionless devotees only. Therefore, special stress is given to the devotional service of the Lord by Srila Shukadeva Goswami. That's the conclusion. Prabhupada gives reference to this statement by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakale Ashanta. Some of you know that verse. Krishna Bhakta Nishkam Ataiva Shanta. So the devotee alone is peaceful. And as long as upon the seat of consciousness there is some desire for oneself of bhukti or mukti or siddhi, these desires agitate the mind and one can't be peaceful. If one can't be peaceful, as Krishna indicates in Bhagavad Gita, how can you be happy, but to speak of God conscious? The mind is disturbed and agitated when you don't have, or even when you have what you don't have, and you finally get it. It makes the mind ashanta. So the position of becoming pretensionless or desireless, selfless, is found in devotional service that doesn't have motivation. So step back from that, and now you have Rupa Goswami's teaching what is devotional service. It's unmixed. Anyavilashata shunyam jnanakarma dhanavritam. That's what devotional service in its pure form is, without those kaitava dharma motivations. So now, one last thing. We're not there, but fortunately, we're followers of Rupa Goswami, who is a follower of Lord Chaitanya, who is a follower of the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is spoken by Shukadeva Goswami. And all of those exalted personalities and everyone in the line of disciplic succession is teaching the same thing. They're helping us, both by understanding and coming to the stage of cultivating devotional service that has no motivation. So we may have motivation. In this kind of topic, everyone questions, what do you do when you have motivations that are other than Krishna? So you understand what the goal is, and you strive for the goal according to the right means, without enviousness of what the goal is, or those who have achieved the goal. You just recognize, I'm way over here, and that goal and the persons who have achieved that goal, they're way over there, and I aspire for that. I'm way over here. But that's a wonderful goal. And through achieving that goal, I can know Krishna. And like this Afro-American later said, I want to see God. and I want to speak with him. And whatever can help me get to that condition, I'm interested. That's a Darshata. And such a person can make, that is Uttam Bhakti. That Uttam Bhakti is not only the attainment of the goal, it's moving on the path. Just like a seed can be in a box or a jar or a bag or something for a long time, but the potential of the full plant or tree or whatever it is within the seed. And when that seed is nurtured, it'll sprout and start to grow, and in course of time it'll manifest the fully matured plant or tree with its flowers and fruits and the whole thing. Love of God is attainable by each and every one of us, regardless of our whatever stuff we're carrying, whatever our backgrounds may be or may not be. If we take this path of pure devotional service given to us by Rupa Goswami, we can be sure of reaching that goal, carefully following the path, with careful guidance, good association, and carefully guarding against offenses. Don't let elephants trample your garden. Don't make offenses. Okay, so any discussion? Yes, Kim?
When there are obstacles in life, for me it happens that sometime I try to sometimes I desire, like most of the time I desire that obstacle be gone, rather than trying to, it's like a want moksha type thing.
Yeah.
And it's not trying to establish in relationship with the person that they got it.
Yeah.
Trying to do it in that manner.
So most of us do, just being honest about it.
Yeah. And
it's called material intelligence and independence. And we rely upon our material intelligence and operate with independence and try to work our way around the problems. It's standard procedure. Go ahead.
So, how can I, I see this is an obstacle,
Yes, it is.
It's a big obstacle.
It's major.
And it can cause, whatever we are trying to do,
sure,
it's not going to come.
Yeah, the cure itself is worse than the problem. You just create a whole other set of complex problems by using, the wrong paradigm. Just, have a paradigm shift. How do you do that? Association with devotees and, hearing, you can hear, there is an alternative. You're intelligent, you can analyze things. What is this other paradigm? What is this alternative path? It's inspiring, but I'm really addicted to this other thing over here. But let me continue to hear, and as I continue to hear and associate with those that are exemplifying that path, it looks like a safe path, it's a good path. There's some really nice people on this other path over here. Let me put my big toe in the direction. See what happens. So in other words, little step by step. And very carefully measure the step and measure what, what happens when you make that step. And so by acting in knowledge, Prabhupada writes, it increases faith, because you get some realization when you act in knowledge. There's something even beyond my expectation over here. And it's at once. The reciprocation with Krishna is at once. It's real, I can feel it. I have to have somebody tell me, no, you are feeling Krishna's reciprocation. Repeat after me. You feel it. And so, that nurtures faith. Let me go another big toe over on that side, see what happens. And inch by inch.
Is it okay, you simulate that thought?
Yeah.
It's okay?
Yeah. Each of us, we're all individuals, and we all process things in a slightly different way, sometimes radically different ways, but I'm describing principle. There's now at least two options. There's the, you know, what I'm accustomed to option, like you described, and we're all very familiar with it. We play it out in different ways, but that's the, you know, the composition of that option. Now here's another option. And saintly persons are laying it out for us. There's a really clear roadmap and all the safety signals. Watch out for the S-curve. You got to slow down and everything. You just follow the map to the golden treasure. It's, you know, so, but it's not just a fairy tale. We can experience it.
Sometimes the other problem is not knowing the qualities of the person that has got it. I mean, like, not able to remember it more and more. And like
remembrance comes from having a relationship. Remembrance of a person is by having a relationship with a person. It's real basic. It's not like mechanical. You just, you know, filter it into your binary processor and you make sure that it's there on your hard drive. And that, you know, that it comes up on your screen because it's your screensaver. I got to remember Krishna. It comes up a one instead of a zero. It's a relationship. It's from the heart. And something that helps one in that relationship with Krishna is those that are dear to Krishna. Because they are carrying love for Krishna in their heart. And you associate with them, you feel that love for Krishna that they're carrying in their heart, and you feel an attraction for that quantum of love for Krishna that they have. Helps you remember Krishna by that relationship with those persons. It's one of the reasons that we're doing what we're doing today. Some persons that don't know each other are meeting other persons that are really inspiring persons. And there's so many varieties of those inspiring persons, of different personalities that are caring love for Krishna. When there's a relationship, then you can easily remember the person. So, cultivate the relationship. So, ready.
And the aspiration should be to become selfless and just want to serve Krishna.
But
I don't have. It's so inconceivable to me. I don't have that desire. And what motivates me is that, like you were saying, saintly persons are laying out this path for me. You're taking so much trouble to give it to me, and I want you to reciprocate, and it's good for me. So, but that's still me in the center, it's good for me. So is that selfishness?
Well, let's put it this way. The because you've expressed this in letters that you've written of late, I take it that this is not just a meditation, it's a strong feeling that you're having, strong feelings of gratitude for others that are helping, reaching out to you and so forth, as you just described. That's a relationship. It's a relationship with Krishna, because those are just extensions of Krishna. Their personalities are not objects, mere objects. But that's Krishna's extending to you. And, you know, it makes one happy. It feels good and it feels right. So, what Prabhupada writes in the purport is that is what real selflessness is. It's what one's real self-interest is. This pretension is, my self-interest is I want stuff. I want attention. I want affection. I want things. And this helps me get affection, attention, and things, and so I do it because, you know, it hits my perk buttons. But that's especially when we're following the path of Rupa Goswami, it carries us to that selfless position, where it's, those other things are there, that's not what's the motivator and inspirer, it's the relationship. So I want to give to that relationship. So these feelings of gratitude awaken those deeper feelings, the selfless feelings. Feelings of gratitude are the preliminary stages of selfless. It's like a bridge that crosses from nescience into transcendence, gratitude, and genuine gratitude, not the little toy that you tilt and the toy says, thank you. But feelings of gratitude. And from those feelings of gratitude comes service. And that's the preliminaries of selfless love, selfless service. Although surrounding that may be so many other entities other than gratitude. But it's preliminary. And as that grows, the gratitude grows and it matures. It's the seed that's starting to sprout. And the creeper of devotion grows into its fully manifested state. So yes, is Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti according to the indications of Rupa Goswami part of Uttam Bhakti? Yes. It's an early stage of Uttam Bhakti. So the answer is yes. And surrounding that may be other stuff. Those genuine feelings of gratitude be nurtured. Value those feelings very much. And what comes from those feelings are offerings of selfless service. Although surrounding is other stuff. Other stuff is also getting nurtured. And we want to do the gardening program where we pull out those weeds as they grow. And that in part is focusing on what the creeper that we really want is. Just feelings of gratitude. And when some egotism arises, oh, I'm getting attention. They really like me. You know, that, whatever that stuff is. That's an effort we also have to make. But the strength to do that comes from cultivating what we really want. The real creeper of devotion. Okay.
But Maharaj, ultimately all we are doing it for our own self. Ultimately it leads to even if...
That's your opinion. That's not my opinion.
Just clarify, Maharaj, so even if we go to Krishna, ultimately it will be that benefiting the self, right?
Yeah, there is such a thing as one's real self-interest. And when one acts in one's real self-interest, what is that real self-interest? It's serving, selfless service to Krishna. That's a real self-interest. So the objective, Rajiv, is not voidism. The objective is a real self-interest, not voidism. The real self-interest is loving service. Do we have a real self-interest? We definitely have a real self-interest. Krishna. Loving Krishna. We don't become zero. Yes. Arvind?
Swaraj, I have two different questions.
Okay.
First one is, you mentioned about Shukadeva Goswami's identifying Brahma, Lord Brahma's and Lord Shiva's humility,
yes,
sorry, position,
yes,
so feeling, yes, humble, and then glorifying them. The question is, what observations did he have to come to that position of identifying that humility and glorifying that? Like, how can
he heard from Vyas, who heard from Narada, who heard from Brahma? He's into cyclic succession. He not only knows as in the case of having information, he's realized soul. Coming up in about five verses, he starts speaking about Lord Brahma and Narada. The question you've asked, Maharishi Pariksit, is such a wonderful question. The exact question was discussed by Brahma and Narada. He gives details. So he's not like a kindergartner. He knows.
So how can, personal way, how can I see a devotee and understand his position and become humble and then appropriately glorify? Like, what are some of the things that one should be looking for in a devotee?
Okay, well, a broad stroke answer is that question is asked, is addressed repeatedly in the scripture. In Bhagavad Gita alone, it's addressed about four times. What are the symptoms of a self-realized soul? How does he walk, sit, and speak? What are the symptoms of one who is beyond the modes of nature? And so on. So, there's... the symptoms are there, repeatedly described. And one of the principles that we're hearing here, one has no other shelter. So you can observe that externally, and within oneself one can observe it internally. Like when everything's going along normal, whatever that is, and then suddenly some shocking news comes. Where does your mind go? And consistently, where does the mind go? What's your shelter? What's that resource that you turn to get strength, for protection? So it's the symptom of, there's symptoms of surrender, there's six of them. And one who accepts things that are favorable, rejects things that are unfavorable for pleasing Krishna, there's some symptoms you can know internally and externally. At least to a certain degree. Externally you can evaluate. And Krishna is my only protector. Krishna is my maintainer. Now how do I think of the income that I earn from my employment? Is it my skill set is maintaining me? My employer is maintaining me? Or Krishna is maintaining me? How do you think about your capacity to earn a livelihood? There are some litmus test examples. A nice example is how you chant your rounds. Where's your energy going when you're chanting your rounds? Is it all over the place? Or what? You know, so there are qualitative ways of evaluating. And as I gave an answer to Hemangi's question yesterday, you look at the broad picture, not an isolated something.
So it has to be over a period of time,
yeah,
to be evaluated.
Yes.
Because many times we evaluate devotees and they seem humble, but then there are some actions which have never been
sure. One who remains unprovoked even when there's provocation.
It's
holy. It says what their real shelter is. Things are going along smoothly and everything's fine. Some startling something happens. Now what happens? Where does the consciousness go? With this provocation, where does consciousness go? So, Narayana Paraksarge Naputaschana Vibhyate, that verse by Lord Shiva, appreciating Chitraketu. Apitoyarta Darshanam, one sees, this is a Bhagavad Gita message, but one sees everything with equal vision. Pandita Samadarshana. And not just philosophically, you can recite the verse, but your behavior speaks that way. Mm-hmm. Equal. Amidst tribulation and jubilation. Equal. You can't pretend that. You can't, it's not a cosmetic. You can get in the market. It's something that is a quality. When Srinathji he's interviewed in Your Ever Well Wisher. When he met Prabhupada, he says, I'm a businessman. Mm-hmm. So the nature of a businessman is to find the weakness of another person. Mm-hmm. So I probed Srila Prabhupada to see, will he become angered? Will he be greedy? Is he motivated? Where's his weakness? And there was no weakness. He was equal in all circumstances. It wasn't pretense.
Is this a correct attitude?
No. But we observe. You don't have to like put the prompt out. Nature has its prompts and you just observe. One is steady in all circumstances.
Question.
Yeah.
Can I ask?
Yeah.
The theme of the presentation that I've attended, like you talked about establishing and nurturing the relationship with Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
And Guru and Krishna.
Yes.
So my question is, can you kindly elaborate more on relationship with Guru, both the practical and philosophical? Given my question is arising from the fact that there is a system of, especially in the society, like mentors and counselors, and because of the breadth of the society, like Guru is not easily accessible sometimes. So what is the right attitude for an aspiring devotee towards the Guru and the persons that he is given to take care of?
And the last part was in relation to, what was the last point?
Yeah, what should be the attitude of an aspiring devotee towards the system? Like?
Well, I'll share some thoughts on this. I have some pretty strong thoughts on this subject. And the strong thought is, one of the strong thoughts is that there's two big ones. One is that the reality of spiritual life is that there are many persons that are involved in the nurturing and the cultivation of Krishna consciousness of any individual. And if there's overdue emphasis upon one person of those many persons, it does great injustice to the reality. Bhakti Tirtha Swami used to speak this message, that to raise a child, it takes a village. Now, the primary caretakers of a child is the mother and father. But there are many persons that are role models and examples and, you know, persons who a child will mold their life after, in addition to the parent. They have a balanced person. It's not just mom and dad. It's all the people that, you know, becomes a socially well-adjusted individual. The reality is, it takes many persons. That's the reality. So, my position is, let us acknowledge reality. And acknowledging reality may mean formalizing reality. Because when we have unstructured reality, it's, communication channels break down and relationships become hurt because communication breaks down. A lot of communication, of relationship breakdowns comes from communication breakdowns. Reality is, we're taking assistance from many persons. There may be, in the case where one is taking shelter of a spiritual master, that's a most prominent relationship. But then go to the Shiksha Guru side. And in our society, the reality is we have many persons that are inspiring us in Krishna consciousness, aside from our Diksha Guru. That's the reality. And if it's not like that, there's something dysfunctional. Because, or just denial. The reality is there are many persons. It's an international system. It's how Prabhupada set up our organization. The multiple guru system, and not one successor acharya, but the GBC is the ultimate managerial authority, and then persons taking up spiritual shelter-giving functions. That's our reality. And that's by design. Not by default. Prabhupada intended it that way. So let us acknowledge that. Or go the other way. Not acknowledging that is an injustice to the many people who are giving shelter and support and nurturing the spiritual lives of our whole International Society for Krishna Consciousness. It's very unjust. Very unkind. Very unreal. Very hurtful. And I hear from devotees that are in that position of, they're not initiating spiritual masters, for example, but they're giving significant shelter and guidance, and they feel hurt. Some of them don't say it, they just like go along with it, but some of them feel really hurt and they say it. This is, it's driven a number of senior devotees from our society who have just been brushed to the side by leading personalities who, they've got the principal relationship. But the others are the caregivers also. You just dismiss them. They go away. That's a mistake. We have to learn from the mistake. We may not be able to fix the past mistakes. We can apologize to those that were brushed aside. But let us not go forward and continue to do it. So, formalize those relationships. Support them. I'll give an example of maybe not what you're speaking about, but it's something that I believe is an important role for someone that has a service to our founder Acharya, as I do. I like going to Bhakti Vriksha groups, you're familiar with they are, where I don't say anything during the whole Bhakti Vriksha gathering. And the function is supporting the relationship of the facilitator of the Bhakti Vriksha group with the members of the Bhakti Vriksha group. Supporting the teacher-student relationship. Because it's a real relationship. Doesn't mean the relationship of the students with, you know, GBC guru and sannyasi is zero, but that's an important relationship. I do three things that I like. I especially, you know, there's some devotees that don't like me to do that. They like me to do the other thing. You know, be the guru, sannyasi, GBC role. But I believe it's important to, so I'm taking notes on how the person is handling the dynamics of the group and the individuals and the interactions, and I'm giving them critique and feedback, constructive evaluation. I didn't get that. I went through the school of learn by mistakes. And many mistakes were made and people were hurt. But I wasn't as effective as I could have been if I had been given some feedback. This was good. That could be a little bit better. You better watch out for that over there. It's a landmine. Oh. So, evaluation for the sake of improving. When it comes to the questions and answers section, then, you know, physically everyone changes their position and so they have their questions. Then it's, you know, Guru Sannyasi DBC, so I do that role. And then the most important thing is supporting the relationship. I believe it's an important function for those who are in leadership positions that are society to support the real relationships that exist. Support them. So that in that spiritual master, sannyasi, whatever it is, figure, in their absence, that relationship is intact. Not that, you know, there's a problem and I just skip past that person and go to the gurus, and I just, you know, the poor leaders just get swamped with stuff that should be handled over here. If the relationships are respected. But when the relationships aren't respected, then so much stuff. And it's circuit overload to deal with all that stuff. It's not sensible. And it's not reality. It's disrespectful. It's a mistake. So I don't want to participate in recreating the same mistakes that were made in the past. Personally, I feel very strongly about it. Our society is an international society. For Krishna consciousness, and there are many persons that are aspiring, many persons to come to the stage of committing to Krishna consciousness. And another thing is, there's going to be a day when, you know, spiritual leaders of today are not around. So what are we doing today to set up that system so that things will go on very nicely? We put too much emphasis on the person and not on the reality. We got a problem when those persons disappear. Now Prabhupada saw that. What did Prabhupada do? Prabhupada did exactly what this other system is. Now I never wrote one letter to Prabhupada. There are devotees that did. But I was just busy serving his mission. And I trusted that the persons who he personally trained would represent him well, and if I had questions, I would go to them. And that's what he wanted. Because that's what he wanted, that's what I did. I didn't feel bereft. He had trained certain persons, and he said, now that I've trained you, you train others. That's the system that Prabhupada gave. So that he could translate, he could focus on translating, he can do the spiritual work that was giving that gift that would keep on giving, his books and his directions for society, but also to create that system that in his physical absence things would go on. I in that system, and I followed that system, I'm trying to recreate that system. Perhaps, you know, in terms of spiritual instruction, with a little more detail, like with the counselor system, etc. But I'm promoting it. I'm inviting a devotee to come from India, and in my GBC zone here in Chicago and in New Jersey and in New York, to see how the Bhakti Vriksha system can become, in according to local needs and situations, connected to the counselor system, because I believe in necessity of spiritual care. That doesn't have to depend upon one person. Spiritual care. So we have, nationally, we have spiritual care initiative. I'm part of that spiritual care initiative, because I believe that's what real leadership means. And real leadership means to train others to give spiritual care. So those persons who are trained by those who are giving spiritual care can learn how to give spiritual care. And then we have a whole network, have a loving network of devotees that understand not only it's important to receive spiritual care, it's important to extend spiritual care. Have a loving network of Vaishnavas. That's what we do. We receive and we give spiritual care. So formalize it. Why not? Give it some structure instead of, you know, it goes on and just goes on. It's kind of random. Not force it, but nurture it. And in that system of spiritual care, those persons who I request to extend that, they're keeping me informed. It's just like sitting in the Bhakti Vriksha group. I'm observing very carefully the dynamics in the Bhakti Vriksha group. I'm observing very carefully the details of spiritual care, and I'm training the person to give spiritual care, how to do it. So then it's not, you know, throw them in the water and see if they can swim. I'm giving them lessons so they can swim. They can give spiritual care. And they feel the support that enables them to feel the courage and confidence, not through false ego, but through service to give spiritual care. And then in turn, those who they're giving spiritual care to give spiritual care.
So sometimes there's a tendency to send you a letter or email directly. So given this system, and given that you're doing many activities to further your mission, which gives you all potential, what is the right thing to do?
I give you three answers to that. One is, ask me. Another is, ask your counselor. You know, is this, what's your, let me pass this through your filter. You know, please guide me. What is an appropriate something? And a third is, yes, general reports. And general, you know, monthly or periodic, whatever it is, reports. And in those periodic reports, you will receive, you'll filter out the less important and, you know, what's really important that you want it, you want some direct communication on. Yeah. So all three of those, ask, or in general periodic reports, weekly, monthly, whatever it is, reports, you know, what's at the top of the important list. And again, the principle of let some time pass and see if something that seems urgent is not really urgent. It's not really urgent and important. It's just like, you know, an itch that's scratching, and so I go like this. Then I have to bother my spiritual master about this. Rather than something that's really important. And, you know, it's really a fundamental kind of, even if it's a training point, but then respect the fact that I want to support the reality of and train others to be caregivers. And observe that, because you're an observant person. You don't just experience things, you assess things. And as you're assessing the dynamic of how this is working, that's also your training, so that you can do the same, just as I expressed to you, and you're right, that understand, that's what's going on, is as you're getting training, you will be training up. Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness means you learn something, you become expert at that something, and you teach others to do that something. That is Krishna consciousness. Burijan taught me that one. And he's following the principle. His service is scripture study. So he pioneered Bhakti Shastri, he did Bhakti Pai Bhav, now he's doing Bhakti Vedanta. They're going through the whole, so he has, because I have a friendship with him, he's giving me stuff before it comes out from publication. But you know, surrender unto me, he provided me with an electronic copy. Now I have copies. Part of what I'm doing with the second canto is a study of the first six cantos of the Bhagavatam. My promise is I won't give it to anybody else, so don't ask me. But it's a book that he's going to publish where, you know, for 8 hours a day for about 3.5 years, on behalf of our devotees, for as a service to the devotees, he's prepared Bhakti Vaibhav, the first six cantos of the Bhagavatam. And it's a great resource. I find that Surrender Unto Me book a really powerful resource to enter deeply into the understanding of Bhagavad Gita completely in some way, in harmony with Prabhupada's teaching. So learn something, become expert at that something, and teach that something to others according to our psychophysical nature, and take guidance in doing that, and creating a loving network is the duty of a spiritual leader. I want to do that. I don't want people to feel they're being neglected or something in the course of doing that, but so understand what's going on and be part of that loving network, recipient and a giver of loving exchanges. Okay. Prabhu.
Maharaj, familiarity breeds contempt, and sometimes in close associations you often have a fault finding tendency. Now in my personal case is that I see faults, but they are still in my mind. I have not disclosed. I don't tell anyone about those thoughts.
Now you are.
However, these thoughts tend to kind of modify your behavior towards those individuals. So even when those thoughts are not being spoken of directly, they still have an impact on the behavior.
Yes.
In that sense, even though you are aware that, okay, these thoughts are there and you are making an effort not to say it, but they are still there and they are kind of affecting your behavior.
I got it.
So
what to do?
because it could actually have, I mean, there is a potential of actually it coming out.
It is coming out, even if it doesn't come out verbally. Your testimony, and everybody knows it's a fact from their own experience, personal and interpersonal, what's inside comes out. It may not come out in harsh words, but it comes out. It comes out in attitude, it comes out in behavior, it comes out in non-verbal communications. So, what to do, right? Well, the short is give up fault finding and put something in its place. Bhakti Siddhanta's message is a long story, but I won't go into the long story. Is a Vaishnava, so this is training. You're not there, but it's training. A Vaishnava by nature first looks within to see where there is fault, knowing that when there's something out there that causes me disturbance, it's because my own heart is honeycombed with the very same fault. In material psychology, it's called projection. Do it a different way. Imagine Srila Prabhupada being in the situation that you're in, and how's he going to process being in the situation that you're in? Is he going to be fault-finding? Is his mind going to be agitated, feeling, but not wanting to say because it'll be an offense if he says, and just, you know, vibing the person? That's not going to happen. Because his heart is pure. I've got this problem because my heart's not pure. A Vaishnava is one who, now back to Bhakti Siddhanta, by reflex, at once, looks within. Circumspecting, just like Nanda was saying yesterday, I don't have enough circumspection, you know, self-inspection time, self-evaluation time. But moment to moment is self-evaluation time. And when you see that tendency come, so the strategy, the attack, your attack on the fault-finding propensity should be when you, in sequence, as you understand, this is my impurity. And I'm taking ownership of the problem. The problem is not this person provoked me. The problem is over here. My heart is not pure. Let me get down to the real business of my heart's not pure. You'll find when you get down to that business, the thought of the provoked, you know, the bad feeling or whatever it is that you were processing before dissipates, because the real problem, as soon as you start addressing what the real problem is, even if it takes a long time to address that real problem, the fruit, which was the disturbed state of mind, is coming from the root of my own impurity. I have to suffer that because of this. And you know, fortunately I have Vaishnava association enough that I know that if I act on it, it's going to cause me a problem. But even just carrying it is causing me a problem because the root is there. Let me go, let me do a little heart surgery. Let me go inside the heart and see what's at the root of my problem. I've got this very same impurity. What can I do to make my heart more pure? Because, again, we'll go back to Srila Prabhupada. I do this regularly. Try to see things through the eyes of a pure devotee. And I'm not a pure devotee, but I know a pure devotee. And through the eyes of a pure devotee, if that pure-hearted soul was in this circumstance, what would this pure-hearted soul do to make the circumstance better? Well, one thing is just by spiritual influence, the circumstance would be better. I can't do that because I don't have spiritual influence. I'm not pure. My project is not to control other people's problems. My project is to become pure. And then when there's purity, and with purity spiritual influence, then Krishna will supply some intelligence, if he so desires, how I can act in such a way to better the situation as a servant of the other person and the situation. I don't have that capacity, so it's downtime right now. I have to go inside and make my heart pure. And there, what are the ways to make my heart pure? You know, there's so many ways. We've been discussing them. Start with hearing and chanting. Start with how you chant your rounds. Let me work on that. And so forth. and that's an exercise to curb the fault-finding propensity. At the root. Let me be the servant. Let me be the humble servant. I mean, try to be the humble servant. Following the path given by Rupa Goswami and the followers of Rupa Goswami. Let me do that. That's my project. That's what I do about this circumstance. Make my heart pure by that method. Priya? I spoke of say it again slower. A little louder.
Spiritual aspiration that will, having a mood of will Krishna be pleased with me.
Yes.
And I have a difficulty in understanding this another statement which you had spoke.
Yes.
Which is standard of pure devotion is without any expectation. So I have
that's an expectation. But that's a spiritual expectation. Without expectation is selfish expectations. Going back to the response I gave to Rajiv. Rajiv.
Doctor woke up, he had to go.
The aspiration in Krishna consciousness is not to become zero. You know, Prabhupada expresses this repeatedly. Desirelessness means to desire what is your real self-interest. What is that real self-interest? A loving relationship with Krishna. That's what I want. That's a desire. But loving Krishna, loving relationship with Krishna is to Krishna. That's what I desire. I want that relationship with Krishna. And that's, you can say, that's selflessness. Or you can say, that's one's real self-interest. Either way. It's not zero. You're processing it.
Maharaj, actually the problem is, while engaging in devotional service, to be in a prayerful mood that it should please Guru and Krishna is there.
Yes.
Is there.
Yes.
But I'm not in that stage to do so purely. So,
okay.
How can I expect that that will please Guru and Krishna because they are independent?
You're striving, this is an important point, important territory, not just a point. When you're striving, when you're, how does it go? The spiritual master is not pleased only because you've attained a certain elevation in the trajectory of spiritual advancement. When you reach a certain stage of elevation, a bell rings that says the spiritual master is now pleased. But that you're striving according to whatever it is that's your resource, you're striving. You're sincerely reaching. That's pleasing. And in addition, one can know when that sincere striving takes place and Guru and Krishna are pleased, your capacity will increase. Mm. Why? Because you're in the internal potency and the internal potency will decorate you with natural qualities. And then you have more resource. And then you don't hold back, you use all of that resource. Whatever that is, in your efforts. And when you just keep going, Guru and Krishna see. Not what your position in the trajectory of spiritual advancement is, but their sincere striving. And, you know, there are persons in this room and outside of this room that have had extended periods of struggle to deal with obstacles and even in striving. But they continued with the striving. And magic happens. The magic is one feels the uplifting hand of Krishna and wow. It's not only relief from the struggle, that's secondary. It's the relationship with Krishna. It's so comforting. So satisfying. It's heart melting. It's a whole other experience than I'm going to do it. Oh, I can't do it. But I've got to try to do it because there's expectations. So but just stay with the whatever it is that you have. You just stay trying, endeavoring to act within that relationship, and you'll feel the relationship. When you feel the reciprocation in that relationship, you're ready for anything. Yeah. Because it's what we all want. Now this is our real self-interest. We want to love and be loved. Without exception, every living entity desires that. Not just humans, everyone desires. When we experience that, we can go anywhere and do anything. And we know that we're not being judged. There's no bells ringing, there's no one keeping score. You're not good and bad. It's a relationship. Yeah? Yes. Okay.
She says,
here's a question, that Krishna is kind and he is impartial. He punishes us according to our karma, and at that time he doesn't show any compassion no matter how much we plead. That's a different Krishna than I know. Krishna doesn't show any compassion no matter how hard we plead. That's not so. That's not the Krishna I know. Now, here's an important principle. You can translate for your mother. When you surrender unto Krishna, you should know that you're surrendering unto Krishna means to surrender on Krishna's terms. So our expectation of Krishna's reciprocation may be, here's our requisition slip, make this different, make that different, make this become that, and that become this. If you really love me, you'll demonstrate your love for me by following my requisition slip. That's not surrendering unto Krishna. When we surrender unto Krishna, it's on his terms. He fixes the problem. He fixes the problem by taking us altogether out of material existence into spiritual existence. The permanent fix of the problem. Krishna can easily change the configuration of matter. But then we become little spoiled kids. Ask your mother, your mother-in-law, every time her granddaughter wants something, does she jump and immediately do that, whatever that thing is that daughter-in-law or granddaughter wants? Or does she evaluate? This is good for her. That's not good for her. Even she whines and cries. I'm not going to give that because I know it's not good for her. So does that mean she doesn't have affection? No matter how loud the screaming goes, and she doesn't care and doesn't... But her position of consciousness is different than that of her granddaughter. And Krishna's like that too. It's very easy for Krishna to give some material thing. It's a whole other thing to awaken the consciousness of love of God. So we have the position of representing Krishna also with being teachers or being a parent. You not only have the responsibility to answer all the demands of your dependent, but to train your dependent to be delivered from birth and death, to go beyond the limitations of material expectation. That takes greater compassion than just fulfilling demands. It takes greater skill set too. It takes greater consciousness. I mean, as a mother, I'm sure you recognize this. And as your child grows and grows, the demands become greater. It gets real subtle. You follow? You can translate.
The question is related to, like, the context is that when we have this service of giving Krishna consciousness to others.
The service of giving Krishna consciousness to others is our service, and then?
So, in that context, if there are two questions. One is that sometimes I feel that if that particular behavior will be not a good example before others, so does it come under pretense?
No. You're serving. No, it can be self-deluding, pretense, that is, I'm really, something else, but I don't want the other person to think badly of me, and so I'll do what I'm not. But then, okay, let me be honest, I'll just be ridiculous, and then... So you're being chastened by the service. Yes, there certainly can be a mix, and it can be self-delusion, deluding, or other deluding mix, but if you're in the position of trying to serve Guru and Krishna, trying to be a follower of Rupa Goswami by standard, then that's cultivation. That's bhakti. Anukulyena Krishna Roshimara. Bhakti Uttama. Because the question then is the motivation, not the behavior. It's the consciousness we carry, not just the actions that we perform or don't perform. If we have the right consciousness, we'll perform the right actions as far as we can. Again, according to the capacity that we're carrying. Okay?
Another thing is that, as Prabhu asked, that if I see some fault in others, and sometimes I try that, let me see in myself, but then it seems like it is, I have that fault, but it seems that I have to tell other person or that it is there, or I become disturbed if I don't tell.
And that's your problem. That's not the other person's problem. Now, if you can be in the right consciousness, then you can say, in the right consciousness, you'll also be concerned to say it in the right way, in the right consciousness. But if I don't have the right consciousness, better to not say it. If that's disturbed my mind, that's part of my problem. That's not the circumstances' problem or the other person's problem. It's my problem. I can't blame the other person for my problem. It's one of the core principles of interpersonal dynamics is I don't blame other persons for my problems. They've got their problems and I got my problems, and I'm trying to be Krishna conscious and interacting. Take the logic of what you just said and say, I've got anger. I'm feeling this intense anger to the other person. If I don't punch him, I'm just going to stay angry. Pow! Now I feel better. You jumped. So it's justified, right? Because if I don't punch him, I'm just going to feel, you know, the seething anger. It's not justified. The rationale is not justified. It's my problem. Let me fix my problem. My problem is lack of purity. Because if I had purity, I wouldn't be feeling the pushing urge that I gotta say it. Because a person with purity wouldn't feel that pushing urge. And you enter into that space of, you know, you got an urge and you got a scratch and so you itch it. I've got an itch and so you scratch it, excuse me. Or I've got this pushing and so I act on it. Then, you know, you're just involving yourself in the whirlpool of actions and reactions of material nature. You made a choice. You can make a different choice. Let me get into the position of transcendence. Let me become connected to Guru and Krishna. Okay, how do I do that? There's a certain set of instructions. What to do in this situation? I can look internally and try to become pure. Let me focus more on how I chant my rounds and how I perform my devotional practices and how I relate to my teacher and my spiritual master and Prabhupada in his teachings. Let me go there. Go back to ABCs. And regularly be attentive to ABCs. And that will give you the strength to then go to this problem and address the problem. If there's some disconnect along the way, you may scratch the itch, but you haven't fixed the root of the problem.
Physical capacity and trying to, I guess I'm not able to completely see that just like what is my service right now. And you said that internal cultivation, but then I'm also finding that internal cultivation also requires doing some service and having association of devotees.
Okay.
And I'm constantly...
How much Srimad Bhagavatam is made up of prayers is huge. It's well over half, close to two-thirds of 18,000 verses is prayers. In the Srimad...
You have to learn... The acceptance of what Krishna's, you know, let's hope it's a temporary arrangement of physical, being physically depleted, and serve Krishna from that position. Just like, let's say, somebody else has more capacity for service because their physical limitation is greater. So then they have their set of things that they have to deal with. I have my set of things I have to deal with, and I'm thinking, gee, I gladly trade the things that I have to deal with, you know, some of the other things that other people have to deal with. But, you know, that wish is a useless wish because...
It's kind of wrong to keep hankering for a day to, like, do that service.
No, it's not wrong to hanker. And it's that hankering that's part of the seed of spiritual ecstasy. And it may be like the elderly Brahmin that was no longer able to perform his worship for his deity, he did it within his mind. And Prabhupada writes about that in the Bhagavad Gita, that performing practical activities for spreading Krishna consciousness or contemplating how practical activities can be taken up to spread Krishna consciousness is the way to fix, the best way to fix the mind. And so within your physical limitations, you can think how to be inspired and an inspirer of others who have physical capacity that you presently don't have, because Krishna's made an arrangement that you don't have it. So let your mind be strong in the areas of, you know, spreading Krishna consciousness, spiritual care of devotees, serving the devotees, and then speak those inspired words to others who have physical capacity, and build relationships with others that have the physical capacity and share that. The role or restricted capacity position of service. Service for Krishna is something else right now, and you know, you understand what some of those services to Krishna are. It includes studying scripture that you weren't able to do because when you were physically more capable, you're running around doing more physical things. So now you have another windfall. Krishna, thank you. And so the problem is, now that I'm reading all these things, I want to share all these things, and I don't have the capacity to share all these things. But this is a time for that. And just say yes to Krishna. And use that inspiration in building relationships with persons that have greater physical capacity and have, can become inspired by those inspiring messages, and will take up those messages and act on them, because you don't have the capacity physically to do that. Yes. I saw a hand, I wasn't sure which one.
I heard that you should not accept service from Guru and Krishna, and then at the same time we always need their help to make progress.
Yeah.
So how can you make me understand how these are not contradictory?
Sure. It's a relationship. That's how they're not contradictory. There are six types of loving exchange. And in a loving relationship, there's give and there's take. There's love and there's trust. Oh, I like that phrase very much. Krishna consciousness is based on love and trust. Give and take. So a relationship has, sometimes we're giving and sometimes we're receiving. And you have any relationship, I can only give, I can't receive, then it's, you just put a wall between yourself and the other person. There's no relationship. I'll come on the other side of the wall and give, but you can't come on this side of the wall and I receive. It's a loving, so take it as a loving relationship. And take up that, cultivate that loving relationship. When we pray to Krishna, please free my heart from all unwanted desires. So it's not we're asking him to be our janitor. Come with his dustpan and disinfectant and clean up the mess that we made. We can't do it on our own. But in a mood of service, please empower my very frail efforts to try to make my heart fit to invite you to reside there. Because without your purity, I'm bereft. It's a relationship. Not, can you come here and do something for me? It's different. The mood is different and the exchange is different. Sometimes we're giving, sometimes we're receiving. That's relationship. And it's based on love and trust. Okay? I think we should end. It's 20 minutes before 10. Thank you very much. Shiva Prabhupada.